is Wealth Wake Up with Dick Donahue on KGMI News Talk 790, 96.5 FM in Bellingham. Streaming live at mybellinghamnow.com.
Okay, good Sunday morning, or Saturday morning. Tomorrow's Sunday. Anyway, happy Easter weekend this weekend. Dick Donahue with you with Wealth Wake Up Live here on KGMI. Going to start out as we usually do with our weekly wrap-up. We saw the major indices mostly settled this week, little change from last week, except for the Russell 2000, which continued its recent outperformance. It jumped by 2.5% this week. There wasn't a big push to buy following solid gains last week, but importantly, there wasn't a big push to sell either. The S&P 500 logged another record-high close on Thursday ahead of the extended holiday weekend. Thursday's session was also the final trading day of the first quarter, which contributed to the muted index-level activity throughout the week due to the understanding that many stocks sit at or near their all-time highs. Relative weakness in the mega-cap and semiconductor spaces also played a role in limiting index-level moves this week. Some names in these spaces have exhibited a huge rise since the start of the year, so this price action reflected some normal consolidation activity. We saw the mega-cap growth ETF declined 0.8%. The semiconductor index fell 0.1% following news that China will not allow chips from AMD and Intel to be used in government computers. Meanwhile, the equally weighted S&P 500 jumped 1.6% this week. Only two S&P 500 sectors closed lower this week. That was communication services down 0.8%, and information technology was down 1.3%. While sectors logging gains greater than 2%, the top performer were utilities up 2.8%, real estate up 2.2%, and energy up 2.2%. Corporate news, the Dow component Boeing announced that CEO David Calhoun, who plans to step down as CEO at the end of this year. So let's take a look at some of the summaries of the daily action. On Monday, the market started the week on a soft note after last week's move higher. A sharp move lower in the late afternoon with no specific catalyst left the S&P 500 near its worst level of the session, down 0.3%. The negative bias was driven by some normal consolidation activity, but downside moves were relatively modest. Weakness in the mega-cap and semiconductor stocks also contributed to the negative bias. Rising Treasury yields also acted as another headwind for stocks. Reviewing Monday's economic data, February new home sales were 662,000. Prior was revised to 664,000 from 661. The key takeaway from this report is that the overall level of sales was largely unchanged from February, while the median selling price decreased for the sixth consecutive month, which is a welcome development for potential buyers. On Tuesday, the major indices closed at or near their session lows, moving further from record highs. The market was trading higher for the majority of Tuesday's session before selling picked up in the late afternoon. The S&P 500 closed just above the 5,200 level, down 0.3% from Monday. The afternoon downturn also coincided with some mega-cap names and chip makers either extending early losses or slipping into negative territory. Still, downside moves were relatively modest, reflecting normal consolidation activity after a big run up recently. Market participants were reacting to an above-census durable goods order for February and a weaker-than-expected consumer confidence index for March that was little change from February's revised readings. So reviewing Tuesday's data, we saw February's durable goods orders were up 1.4%. Prior was revised down to minus 6.9%. February's durable goods, if you took out exclude transportation, were up 0.5%. The key takeaway from this report is that business spending rebounded after a poor January as non-defense capital goods increased 4.4%. We also saw January's FHFA housing index was down 0.1%. January's S&P Case-Shiller home index was up 6.6%. The prior month was revised to 6.2 from 6.1. March's consumer confidence index was at 104.7. Prior was revised to 104.8 from 106.7. The key takeaway from this report is it showed little change in sentiment, which was consistent with the University of Michigan's Consumer Senate survey. On Wednesday, the markets trade had a positive bias. Advancers led decliners by a 9-2 margin at the New York Stock Exchange and a 5-2 margin on the NASDAQ. The upside moves were driven by an ongoing inclination to buy on weakness following Tuesday's afternoon slide. So normal consolidation activity and heavily weighted names kept a limit on the index gains in the early going. By the close, though, many stocks were participating in upside moves, sending the major indices sharply higher. The market only closed at or near its session highs, while the S&P had a fresh all-time high. On Wednesday's data, the Mortgage Bankers Association application declined 0.7%. Purchase applications falling 2%. Refinance applications also were down 0.2%. And we saw the EIA, crude oil inventories build up 3.17 million barrels. Prior week showed a draw of 1.95 million barrels. On Thursday, which was the last trading day of the week, trade was mixed. The S&P 500, the Dow Jones Industrial Average each logged in a 0.1% gain. The NASDAQ closed 0.1% lower. The Russell 2000 continued its recent outperformance, gaining 0.5%. Major indices all made a sharp turn higher around 3 p.m. Eastern time, with no specific news to account for the move, but only drifted off those levels by the close. We saw participation was light in front of the extended holiday weekend, contributing to the muted index level moves. We saw losses in some heavily weighted names, also limited movement in the index level. The mega cap growth ETF, for example, closed down with a 0.3% decline. Still, outsized move in either direction are generally reserved for stocks with specific news driving the moves. While reviewing Thursday's data, we saw weekly initial jobless claims at 210,000. The prior was revised to 212 from 210. And the key takeaway from this report is the low and steady level of initial jobless claims, which is a leading indicator that also reinforces the market's belief that employment conditions remain favorable to continue economic growth. In the fourth quarter, GDP estimate came in at 3.4%. Prior was 3.2%. So the fourth quarter GDP deflator, third estimate was 1.6%. The key takeaway from this report is that the dated information won't have the market moving impact other than to reinforce the market's belief that the economy fared much better than expected in the final quarter of 23, despite the Fed's prior rate hikes. We also saw the March Chicago PMI at 41.4. The Chicago, Michigan sentiment survey came in at 79.4. It was 76.5 a month ago. The key takeaway from these reports is that the overall sentiment has improved in March in conjunction with lessening inflation worries and rising stock prices. We saw February's pending home sales were up 1.6%. And prior month was revised from minus 4.7 from 4.9. Year to date, the Dow Jones Industrial Average is up 5.6, the NASDAQ up 9.1, the S&P up 10.2, and the Russell 2000 is up 4.8%. Dick Donahue with you with Wealth Wake Up Live. We'll be back after a quick break. Thank you for being with us.
You've earned your retirement, and you're ready to fully embrace it. So why not do it with style at Meadow Greens Retirement? You'll enjoy active, independent living with amenities like the library lounge, wellness program, and expansive social calendar. Indulge in 3 daily meals made from scratch, get pampered at the on-site salon, and join in for Friday night socials. Meadow Greens is active retirement, the only locally owned retirement facility in the county, with 1 and 2 bedroom apartments with full kitchens offering the freedom of eating in or enjoying a meal at the Outward 9 or the Duck Hook Bistro. Meadow Greens can also be of help when it's time to transition from an independent apartment to assisted living.
Hi, I'm Josh Howell, director here at Meadow Greens. I'd like to personally invite you to come to our community. I look forward to showing you all that we have to offer. Call Meadow Greens today to arrange a private tour at 354-8200 and online at meadowgreenslinden.com. The grass is always greener at Meadow Greens.
Dr. John's Auto Clinic, located in Bellingham on Kentucky Street, is here for your auto repair and service needs. Trusted and affordable auto repair in Bellingham for over 25 years. Ask about their oil change and maintenance inspections. You can hear Brian from Dr. John's Auto Clinic every Saturday on In the Shop on News Talk 790 KGMI. Or check out Dr. John's Auto Clinic at djautoclinic.com. And on Facebook for the latest in auto repair news. Dr. John's Auto Clinic, reliable, honest, and a part of this community for over 25 years.
We don't have the usual traffic jams that they have in the big city. But sometimes things happen to snarl everything up. Depend on KGMI to keep you cruising to your destination with KGMI Traffic Alerts. We'll tell you where the trouble spots are. And if you see problems on the road, give us a call at 360-676-5464 so we can spread the word. KGMI News Talk 790, 96.5 FM, and KGMI.com.
The opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of KGMI or the Cascade Radio Group.
If tomorrow all the things were gone, I'd work for all my life, and I had to start again with just my children and my wife.
Welcome back to Wealth Wake Up Live. Dick Donahue with you this Saturday morning. Hope you're having great plans for the Easter weekend with your family. It's going to have some nice weather. We're Asset Advisors. We are located out on the Pacific Highway. That's out next to Wilson's Furniture in the Pacific Commerce Center. Our address is 5060 Pacific Highway, Suite 101, Ferndale, 98248. Our phone number, 360-733-1200. And check out our website at wealthwakeup.com. Also, as I announced last week, I still have tickets for Wednesday's daytime Mariners game. Four tickets and a parking pass. One, I think, 12:40 start, so early game. Should be hopefully nice weather by then. Still then, I'm not sure. I haven't looked at the weather forecast for Wednesday, but I know it's going to have a nice weekend. At any rate, if you're interested, want four tickets and a parking pass, call the office, 360-733-1200. I will get back to you. I'm going to continue on with this week's show. I am going to tell you, I'm going to mix in a little bit of the stuff that I normally do on Sunday today, partly because I had to get my Sunday show to my producer a little early because he was going to be gone for this weekend, and so changing the format around here a little bit. But before we go there, we're going to go ahead and focus on a little bit about the U.S. Treasury yield curve. And basically, it's a visual representation of how much it costs to borrow money for different periods of time. It shows interest rates on the U.S. Treasury debt at different maturities at a different in given point in time. Yield curves come in three forms: normal, flat, and inverted. A normal curve, sloping upwards, suggests healthy economic conditions, investors expecting higher returns for longer-term loans. A flat curve indicates little difference between short and long-term rates, hinting at an economic transition. And an inverted curve, where long-term rates dip below short-term rates, often signals an upcoming recession. Currently, the U.S. yield curve, looking at the 10-year yield minus the 2-year yield, has been inverted for a record 630 days as of this last Wednesday. That is a trend that is raising eyebrows. So let's get a little bit more insight into this. First of all, let's take a look at the 10-year Treasury's constant maturity minus 2-year constant maturity. And the most popular and closely watched yield curve inversion occurs between the yields of the 10 and the 2 U.S. 2-year U.S. Treasury notes. When the yield on the 2-year note exceeds the yield on the 10-year Treasury, it suggests that investors have more confidence in the near-term economy than in the long-term outlook. This inversion reflects concerns about how long economic growth is often interpreted as a signal that a recession may be on the horizon and the next one in one or two years. Back in July 6th of 22, the 2-year Treasury yield exceeded the yield on the 10-year Treasury note and has remained inverted since that time, with a difference shifting 0.34% as of Wednesday's close. Financial markets and policymakers closely monitor this measure due to its historical accuracy in predicting economic downturns. So let's take a look at the length of 2- and 10-year inversions greater than 30 days. If we look back over history, the current inversion of the 2 and 10 has been the longest on record, currently sitting at 630 days as of Wednesday, more than double the average length of inversion going back to 1976. In March 21st, the current inversion surpassed the previous longest inversion, which started back in August of 1978 and lasted 623 days. It's important to note that current inversion is the first one since the Federal Reserve changed the way that they influence interest rates by switching to an abundant reserve monetary policy after the great financial crisis. Time is going to tell if the current inversion will once again have the same relationship as it has had throughout history. So let's also take a look at some of these long and variable legs that we've seen. Since 1976, there have been six times when the yield curve has inverted for more than 30 days. Each time a recession has followed, with the only exception being a 1982 inversion when the economy was already in a recession. The average lead time from inversion to recession is 15 months, with a minimum lead time of 10 months and a maximum of 18 months. Notably, the S&P 500 index hit all-time high during four of these five inversion periods where a recession followed. As of today, we do not believe that we are in a recession, but we believe that we could slip into one by the end of the year. I'm also going to take a look at my global roundup that I typically do on Sundays. Again, I had to do some of my recording early for tomorrow's show. We saw global equities hit their record highs. Territory's momentum remained strong. Yield on the 10-year U.S. note was little change at 4.22%. Barrel West Texas Intermediate oil was steady around 82.40. And volatility as measured by the CBO volatility index is basically unchanged at 12.99. We saw the Congressional Budget Office chief has also warned of U.S. debt trajectory. In an interview with Financial Times, U.S. Congressional Budget Office Director Philip Swagel said that the U.S. government debt is in an unprecedented trajectory that's going to cause bond market backlash similar to the one that engulfed the United States 18 months ago. He said the annual issuance of U.S. Treasuries has nearly doubled since the beginning of the pandemic, as the debt pile grew to $26.2 trillion, or it's 97% of gross domestic product at the end of 2023. We also saw China's President Xi Jinping meet with U.S. business leaders this week in sidelines of the China Development Forum and an annual conference in Beijing. China has sought to foster a more welcoming environment for international businesses in recent months, after foreign direct investment fell to its lowest level in decades last year. China's economy is showing signs of stabilizing. Industrial profits are up 10.2% for January and February period of this year from a year earlier, according to official statistics released Wednesday, although this was partially thanks to a low base in 2023. We saw the U.S. Case Shiller Home Index rose 6% year over year in January. We also saw the Bank of Japan's recent move to end negative interest rates. The yen weakened to a 34-year low at 151.97 to the U.S. dollar on Wednesdays, and Japanese authorities expressed their disapproval of the recent moves, calling them disorderly. We saw preliminary U.S. durable goods orders rose 1.4% in February. Non-defense orders, except for aircraft, rose a modest 0.7%. We saw Atlanta Fed President Rafael Bostic said he expects just one FOMC rate cut this year. I think you're going to see more of that as we go along. I see more than I'm reading. We went from six cuts, five cuts, three cuts. Now we're seeing some of them say one cut. We're going to have to keep an eye on what happens with interest rates here. The S&P Global this week downgraded its U.S. regional lenders to negative from stable over their exposures to commercial real estate. Credit rating agency said it has downgraded First Commonwealth Financial, M&T Bank, Synovus Financial Trust, Mark, and Valley National Bank Corp. We also saw that collapse of the bridge in Baltimore. The port is a hub in the U.S. auto industry, especially motor vehicles and parts accounting for about 42% of all imports passing through it. We saw China filed a complaint with the World Trade Organization over the U.S. subsidies of electric vehicle manufacturers. The complaint alleges that the Inflation Reduction Act is discriminatory and distorts supply chains. And the Canadian economy grew 0.6% month over month in January after contracting 0.1% in December. So Bloomberg reports that the U.S. is asking allies to impose restrictions on maintaining chip-making equipment in China as the Biden administration seeks to thwart the Chinese efforts to produce advanced semiconductors. And we're seeing U.S. pending home sales soared 1.6% month over month, but fell 2.2% over the last year. Going to go ahead and take a quick break. We'll be back shortly.
Hello, folks. This is Phil George. I'm an elder law and estate planning attorney here in Bellingham, and I would like to invite you to join me every Saturday and Sunday at 1 p.m. right here on KGMI for the Aging Hour. If you have questions about Medicare, Medicaid, long-term care costs, probates, wills, trusts, or anything else that has to do with aging, this is the radio show for you. Studies show that more than 70% of estate plans fail when families need them the most. Join us every Saturday and Sunday at 1 p.m., and we can show you how to set your family up for success.
When you buy a Subaru from Dewey Griffin, you're buying more than a vehicle. You're buying safety for your family, an investment that will hold its value, and reliability that will last a long, long time. Simply put, you are buying trust. Celebrate them both now with special offers during the Subaru A Lot to Love event on now through April 1st. Dewey Griffin Subaru, community-minded, community-driven, and the only Subaru-certified tire and service center in Whatcom County.
This is Tom Borthwick, the Diamond King. You think about your lady every 20 minutes. You think of how wonderful you are together, how she supports you, loves you every day. It's time to show her what you think about her and how much you love her. Right now is the perfect time because Diamond Days is on now at Borthwick Jewelers. 50% off certified diamonds, 33% off engagement rings, and 20% off semi-mounts at Borthwick Jewelers in Ferndale.
MyBellinghamNow.com is an exciting new news site covering Bellingham, Whatcom, and surrounding areas. Breaking news, community and business updates, local crime and sports reports, the stories that connect us and make this an incredible place to call home. Connect with our community like never before on the all-new MyBellinghamNow.com. And the best part, it's 100% free. No news hidden behind a paywall ever. MyBellinghamNow.com. Your community, your news, just a click away. MyBellinghamNow.com.
You've got questions about your car or truck, and we have answers on KGMI's In the Shop. Dan from Bellingham Automotive, Brian from Dr. John's Auto Clinic, and Kirk from Angler Automotive are here to help. And we have a great new way for you to get your questions or comments to them. Email them to intheshop@kgmi.com. Then listen each Saturday at 9 a.m. or check out the podcast at mybellinghamnow.com. Once again, that's intheshop@kgmi.com.
The latest local news and important topics of the day from the West Mechanical Studio.
Rest easy in a cool home this summer. Contact West Mechanical Heating, Air Conditioning, and Electrical to add AC to your existing system for as little as $140 a month. Find them at westmechanical.net.
Get the latest news and information 24/7 with KGMI News Talk 790, 96.5 FM in Bellingham. Streaming live at mybellinghamnow.com.
CBS News Brief. Heavy equipment is moving into place in the port of Baltimore to remove debris after the Key Bridge collapse. Este Pinchazen is commander of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers.
By investing this time now in the engineering, we're going to be able to move faster later. And I know right now everyone wants to see things moving. You need to trust that behind the scenes it's moving.
Pope Francis skipped a popular Good Friday procession of the cross in Rome. Here's CBS's Jeff Glore.
The Vatican says he skipped the traditional Good Friday procession to preserve his health ahead of Easter. He is expected to preside at an Easter vigil service today and celebrate Easter Mass tomorrow.
Spring storms are hitting parts of the West Coast. Weather Channel meteorologist Kelly Cass.
Some spots could see perhaps 3 to 5 inches of rain. And then, of course, you've got the snow that's going to be piling up across the High Sierra. We have had quite a busy winter season on the West Coast.
CBS News Brief, I'm Wendy Gillette.
And I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free. And I won't forget the men who died, who gave that right to me, and I gladly stand up.
welcome back to Wealth Wake Up Live. Dick Donahue with you this Saturday morning. Going to also do our report normally that we do on Sunday on the fourth quarter final GDP report because I think it's important. But before we get into that, we want to also talk about the part of the report that was on the economy-wide corporate profits, where they rose 4.1% in the fourth quarter versus the third quarter, and they were up 5.1% from a year ago. Profits from domestic industries rose 5.2%. Profits from the rest of the world fell 1.7%. Domestic non-financial industries rose 5.9%, and domestic financial industry profits increased 1.3%. Financial industry data includes the Federal Reserve, either profits or losses, and because the Fed now pays private banks interest on reserves and has raised interest rates, it has been generating unprecedented losses in recent quarters. If you exclude these losses at the Fed, because we want to accurately count profits in the private sector level, overall corporate profits were up 2.8% in the fourth quarter and 6.7% from a year ago. So let's plug in these non-Fed profits into the capitalized profits models, and it suggests that stocks remain overvalued. Today's final report on the fourth quarter, the final report on the fourth quarter GDP was revised higher to a 3.4% annual rate versus the estimated 3.2% a month ago. The higher overall number can be attributed to upward revisions into consumer spending on services, along with commercial construction and government purchases, which more than offset revisions to inventories and net exports. Meanwhile, initial GDP, which is real GDP growth plus inflation, rose at a 5.1% annual rate in the fourth quarter, is up 5.9% from a year ago. In addition to corporate profits, we also got a fourth quarter total for real gross domestic income. That's an alternative to GDP that is just as accurate. The real GDI rose at a 4.8% annual rate in the fourth quarter, is up 1.9% versus a year ago. This is slower than the 3.1% in real GDP. In other news, initial unemployment claims declined 2,000 last week to 210,000, while continuing claims increased by 24,000 to 1.819 million. These figures are consistent with continued job gains in March. As for other economy-wide news, the Federal Reserve reported that the M2 measure of money supply was unchanged in February, but down 1.7% from a year ago. It's down 4.3% from its peak in April of 22. This is not a good sign that the real GDP growth in the year ahead, and it's consistent with our view that we are headed for a recession. Well, got to get at it here now. Basically, we're seeing that the U.S. auto industry is facing a grim future as the EPA mandates set up EV for electric vehicles. Not since Prohibition has the federal government sought to ban a product as popular as the internal combustion engine. Last week, the Environmental Protection Agency released its final emissions standards rule requiring that 70% of new vehicle sales be pure battery-powered electric or hybrids by 2032. Prohibition was a disaster. It ended 13 years after it began. If implemented, this rule, again the EPA rule, will take away Americans' choice in cars and could be equally harmful. The new rule comes at a time when auto manufacturers are dialing back on EV investments because EVs are left unsold on dealers' lots. The EV maker Fisker has stopped production. Apple is switching from building EVs to investing in artificial intelligence. Ford has paused shipments of its new F-150 Lightning pickup trucks. Mercedes and BMW no longer plan to go all electric by 2030. Basically, EVs are more expensive. They take a long time to recharge. They lose battery range in cold weather, especially when the car has its heating systems on. The best-selling vehicle in America is the F-150 pickup truck. The electric version costs $17,000 more than the gasoline model, and it does not have the towing and/or lugging capability of the gas-powered version. This rule is going to put a lot of pressure on small businesses and farmers who need gasoline-powered pickup trucks basically for the business to do their jobs with electric vehicles. It's going to, because recharging saps valuable time from a day. For example, let's take landscapers who go from house to house improving people's yards. If no charging stages are nearby, they can't take two-hour breaks just to charge the station, a charging station just to recharge. This disproportionate effect on small business and agriculture is going to result in higher prices for services and food and upward pressures on inflation. People already follow food prices closely, and they complain that food costs more. The rule is going to cause electricity outages because the grid, even by 2032, is unlikely to be set up for 10 million electric vehicles, which would be 70% of today's new car sales to charge, a number that would grow over time. Electricity outages mean that people won't be able to charge their EVs, and other services and appliances that rely on electricity won't be reliable either. This means scheduling homework, cooking around, and cooking, etc., will have to take place when the power comes on. A companion power plant rule from the EPA, which has not been released yet in final form, would make electricity more expensive. The proposed rule would require closure by 2040 of all power plants that did not sequester 90% of their carbon emissions. In an act of stunning dishonesty, the EPA does not mention its proposed power plant rule in its final emission standards rule. The EPA justifies the regulation on the grounds that America will have cleaner air, but EVs are not emissions-free, and they do impose costs on the environment that gasoline-powered cars do not share. Electrifying the U.S. vehicle fleet would be practically no effect on global temperatures by 2100, even as it raises inflation and lowers gross domestic product. Electricity for battery-powered vehicles comes from coal and natural gas rather than renewables. Solar, wind, and nuclear power are generally fully used by other purposes, and additional sources of energy to meet electricity demand come from fossil fuels and hydropower. Until emissions-free fuels are common enough to have a net environmental benefit, battery-powered vehicles are not going to reduce emissions. Producing batteries also causes emissions. Batteries are produced in China. They use energy from coal-fired power plants. Producing batteries for electric vehicles uses carbon. The longer the range of the battery, the more carbon it is used. In addition, transporting batteries from China to the United States also generates emissions. Mining battery ingredients causes environmental damage. EV batteries weighing more than 1,000 pounds and can reach up to 2,000 pounds. About 100,000 pounds of ore are needed to get the lithium, cobalt, nickel, graphite, and copper to make the batteries function. To get the 100,000 pounds of ore, it is necessary to move almost 500,000 pounds of earth. Cobalt mining in the Democratic Republic of Congo is partly performed by children who are sent into the mines to retrieve the minerals. China, Chile, Argentina, and Australia are home of potentially dangerous lithium mines. When the battery is worn out, it must be disposed of. Some materials such as plastics, copper, aluminum, nickel, and cobalt are worth recycling. The remainder is disposed of in landfills, using the method to ensure that the lithium-ion batteries do not catch fire. Raising the cost of transportation and meddling with Americans' personal mobility is never wise. EVs are now suited for the most of America. The large country-wide open spaces and inexpensive individual car transportation is a birthright. This sweeping industrial policy was going to have disastrous economic and personal effects as manufacturers waste resources investing in products that many do not want to buy and the cost of transportation rises. Banning alcohol didn't work as it was intended, and neither is going to be banning of internal combustion engines. And let's go down here and take a little quicker one here. Spending, I'm going to go back to this topic here in a minute, but I'm going to have a break in between. But let's talk about spending dollars on home improvement. and the dollars that could be saving for retirement. They have a choice in some cases. So how do you know if the price of a home project is worth it? Is there any return on investment when you sell? A new wood deck can make a big difference in your lifestyle and your home, but this type of project, which averages about $17,000 in the U.S., only increases your home value by about half that amount on average. That's according to Cost and Value Report, which compares the average cost of 22 common remodeling projects with the value those projects retain at resale in 150 U.S. real estate markets. This report was compiled by Zonda Media, which provides information and data for the home building industry. The recoup cost is one way to help you decide if you should spend or borrow money to add on that deck, another bathroom, remodel the kitchen, or replace that old front door. Generally, some exterior replacement projects provide a higher return on investment than interior discretionary remodels at the time the house sale, the report indicates. Upscale remodels indicate a lower return. An upscale bathroom addition can average over $100,000, but only recoup about 26.6% of that in added home value. An upscale major kitchen job only returns about 31% of its cost, while a minor kitchen remodel with mid-range materials recoups an average of about 85.7%. So here are some projects that give you the most bang for your buck based on national averages. HVAC conversion to electrification. Convert from fossil fuel burning furnace to electric heat pump, for example. Average job cost $17,747. Resale value $18,366. You would recoup your costs there at about 103.5%. Garage door replacement. Average cost $4,302. Resale $4,416. Also recoup about 102.7%. Manufactured stone veneer. Average cost almost $11,000. Resale value a little over $11,000. Recoup cost 102.3%. An entry door replacement, average cost about $2,214. Resale value $2,235, an increase of about $21, a little bit of a recoup. Siding replacement with vinyl, average cost over $16,000. Resale value, it increases a little over $15,000. Recouping cost about 95%. Siding replacement with fiber cement, average cost over $19,000. Resale values only increased by $17,000. Cost recouped about 88.5%. A minor kitchen remodel, mid-range, average job cost $26,790. Resale values only increased by about $22,963. Cost recouped about 85.7%. Window replacement, vinyl windows, a little over $20,000. Resale value has only increased a little bit less than $14,000, so recouping costs there of about 68.5%. A bath model, mid-range remodel, job cost $24,606, only increases resale value by $16,413. Cost recouped is about 66.7%. My experience has been, don't spend the money doing those remodels. Sell the house and let the buyer do it. Probably going to be better use of your money. Dick Donahue with you with Wealth Wake Up Live. We'll be back shortly.
Now, during Staples' Print Big Sale, get $20 off your print purchase of $100 or more, $50 off your print purchase of $200 or more, and $100 off your print purchase of $300 or more. So the more you print at Staples, the more you save. To demonstrate, print, print, print at Staples, you save, save, save. But if you print, 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 print at Staples, you save, 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 save. See how that works? Staples Print Big Sale. Print more, save more. Up to $100. Ends 4/6. Visit staples.com/print for details.
Planning for spring at Lowe's means big savings on outdoor power equipment. And Lowe's knows nothing feels better than free. Buy one select Ego string trimmer, leaf blower, or mower kit. Get one select 56-volt battery free. That's up to a $299 value. Power through spring with Ego, the number one rated brand in cordless outdoor power. Because Lowe's knows home improvement. Valid through 4/3 while supplies last. Selection varies by location.
Why West Edge Credit Union? Because they're all about the community. Of course I like that West Edge has low interest rates and loan specials. But what I really love is that West Edge partners with local nonprofit and City of Bellingham organizations. Plus they put on events like Community Shred. And they talk to me like I'm a real person, not an account number. West Edge really cares.
Join West Edge Credit Union today. West Edge is federally insured by NCUA. West Edge Credit Union, on the corner of James and Alabama in Bellingham.
The mysterious. Incredible stories of patients who have had nurses and doctors visit them only to find out that those people never existed.
Coast to coast.
A physician who died of a cardiac arrest in the hospital, but one of the nurses was on vacation and came back a couple of weeks later, got onto the elevator, and there is the doctor that died.
Every night at 10 p.m. on KGMI News Talk 790, 96.5 FM in Bellingham.
Streaming live at mybellinghamnow.com.
Cause there ain't no doubt I love this land. God bless the USA.
Welcome back to Wealth Wake Up Live. Dick Donahue with you this Saturday morning. Got questions for us? Give us a call, 360-733-1200. And as I mentioned earlier, I have four tickets and a parking pass for Wednesday's daytime game. I think they're playing the Cleveland Cavaliers. Time, I think, is 12:40 in the afternoon. Four tickets and a parking pass. Give me a call if you're interested, 733-1200. Well, let's talk a little bit about the EV mandates that coming out. We're also seeing another proposal that I think is you need to be aware of. There's a proposal that basically is going to have a 15 times price hike in order to drill on federal lands. Basically, it helps threaten U.S. energy dominance. The Biden administration basically is always attacking corporations for raising prices, but they have a new proposed regulation from the Bureau of Land Management that is going to make it more difficult and expensive to produce oil and gas on federal lands, raising the price of American oil and gas and increasing inflation. And although America has been a net energy exporter since 2019, has produced a record 13.3 million barrels a day in December, this hard-won progress is now under direct threat from the Bureau's proposed rule. The rule would raise the cost of oil and gas exploration, driving small companies out of the oil business and limiting exploration and opportunities for larger companies. Basically, the Restoring America Energy Dominance Act is a proposed legislation that seeks to nullify the BLM's damaging leasing rule and prevent the administration from pursuing any similar policies. But if signed into law, the bill would benefit American consumers and small businesses, the national security, by ensuring that our American energy resources remain accessible to safe extraction and therefore affordable. So one of the most striking aspects of this rule is the substantial increase in bonding requirements for drilling operations. A bonding requirement is like a security deposit that companies pay the government. Currently, the minimum bond for an individual lease is $10,000, while a statewide bond covering all of an oil company's leases tops out at $25,000. The Bureau's rule would dramatically increase these minimum levels. Number one, the individual lease from $10,000 to $150,000 a lease, and the statewide bond requirement from $25,000 to $500,000. Well, raising bond requirements is going to increase the upfront cost for projects. It's going to demand higher future profits in order to justify the expense. It's also going to limit the pursuit of projects from moderate profit potential, and it's going to stifle innovation. Small companies cannot afford these new bond prices, so the places that these companies are at a disadvantage. In addition to the problematic bonding requirements, the BLM rule also proposes vague preference criteria that would be used to restrict leasing arbitrarily across wide swaths of federal lands containing oil and gas reserves. They would allow Washington bureaucrats to shut off access to these energy-rich lands based on subjective judgments under the pretext of saving the environment. Leases could even be denied if there's no pre-existing production infrastructure in an area, creating a catch-22 for exploration and discovery. We're already seeing that, where in a lot of cases they're issuing leases, but they're not willing to go out there and allow the leases. They won't allow them to develop the infrastructure that they need to, if they did drill a hole in the ground, find a productive production, they won't allow them to build the infrastructure to transport it out of the property. But if it's finalized and if it's implemented, the rule is going to reduce the supply of energy, and it is going to raise energy costs for Americans. You can take an example. Let's take a look at Germany and their renewable energy mandates. German consumers pay more than three times more for electricity than do Americans. German businesses, this means higher operating costs. Europe's electricity has become so expensive, the trade unions are warning that the threat of deindustrialization. The anti-fossil fuel policies of the Biden administration are steering America towards the same destiny. The BLM rule would reduce the resilience of the American energy to natural disasters, conflicts, or unforeseen crises that would disrupt global supply chains. It also would lower oil and natural gas exports at a time when our allies need them. The rule is especially ironic because the Biden says that his administration is cracking down on corporations that engage in price gouging, that is, getting together to fix prices at higher levels. The solution to price gouging is to allow more freedom to entry, so new firms could come in and provide the product or service at lower prices. Keeping small companies out of any business increases their risk of price gouging. Though innovation techniques such as horizontal drilling and hydrofracking, America has vastly increased its domestic oil and natural gas production. At a time when economic uncertainty and turmoil around the world, the America should be doubling down on its major competitive advantage provided by our energy abundance, not squandering it at our own expense. The Restoring America Energy Dominance Act would preserve America's ability to produce oil and natural gas, benefiting the American economy and global allies alike. So we talk about these things because we think you need to know that they're going on. Well, we also saw that U.S. agencies made $247 billion in improper payments last year, according to the General Accounting Office. We saw improper and incorrect payments by federal agencies, $236 billion in fiscal year 23, according to the government's watchdog agency. Such payments have consistently been a government-wide issue. Since fiscal 2003, which would be 20 years ago, cumulative improper payment estimates from the executive branch agencies have totaled over $2.7 trillion. Reducing improper payments is critical to safeguarding federal funds, the General Accounting Office said in releasing its report. These numbers do not tell the whole story. Some agencies did not report their totals from select federal programs, making them susceptible to significant improper payments. So some agencies refused actually to report their totals. But for the ones we have, we found that Health and Human Services Medicare program had $51 billion in incorrect payments. The Medicaid program had over $50 billion. Department of Labor's Unemployment Insurance, which is the Federal Pandemic Unemployment Assistance Program, was at $44 billion. The Department of the U.S. Treasury Earned Income Tax Credit was at $22 billion. And the Small Business Administration's SBA Paycheck Protection Program Loan Forgiveness Program had $19 billion. These programs that aren't reporting their overpayments include the Department of Health and Human Services, Temporary Assistance for Needy Families, the Department of Housing and Urban Development Office of the Public and Indian Housing Tenant-Based Rental Assistance Program, and the Office of Multifamily Housing's Project-Based Rental Assistance Program. Among the improper payment totals that the federal agencies reported the GAO in the 2023, about $175 billion was characterized as overpayments that the watchdog found. And that report goes on with more information. I'm not going to go there. Did have a question the other day about early retirement and Social Security. Basically, the question was, if his wife takes Social Security at 63 and later I die, will my survivor's benefit be reduced because she retired early? Well, the good news is the wife is that as long as she is at or over her full retirement age, when her husband passes away, she's going to keep the full amount of her that she'd been collecting at the time of his death. If not, it will not adversely affect what she collects as his widow. FYI, though, if she's under her full retirement age when he passes away, her widow's payment would still be based on 100% of his benefit amount. But again, now in this case, because she took it early, it would be subject to some reduction. So knowing, planning, being aware, knowing when you take Social Security, all those things are important for you to know. This has been Dick Donahue with you with Wealth Wake Up Live here on KGMI. I want to thank you for being with us. I hope you have a great Easter weekend. Again, four Mariners tickets and a parking pass for next Wednesday's game. Give us a call, 360-733-1200. And don't forget tomorrow's show at 9 o'clock in the morning. Thanks and have a great week. Take care.
Voiced on the show are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which strategies or investments may be suitable for you, consult the appropriate qualified professional prior to making a decision.